Everybody, good afternoon. So today we're going to cover some exam review. So first, to mention what we covered last time. So last time we talked about hardware description languages, which were basically like programming languages, but instead of being something that compiles to something like assembly, they compile to circuits. Some description of how to physically build a circuit. And we also talked about stages of our processor and emphasized that at this point in the course, this is just a conceptual division. It's not the actual order things happen. That was defined by our clock signal and whether components cared about the clock signal or they just acted when their inputs changed. They did something with some delay. It wasn't based on how we divided things into stages. The hope was that it would be easier to figure out what happens in the processor by going stage by stage. Okay, so some logistical notes before I move on. So some people have been confused about where office hours are. So usually they're in stacks, but this is not always the case. So if you look on the course webpage, on the calendar down here, some office hours are not in stacks. So for example, Rice Hall, room 436. So if you went to office hours on our less busy days when we can A, get rooms in Rice, and B, wouldn't fill the room up with 50 students, some TAs use that room and find it better, like we have more whiteboard space, etc. But please don't go to stacks in that case. Just a few of them, mostly around the weekend. Since some people were confused about that and wondered, would the TA skip their office hours? I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to know if they are, but if you're looking in stacks and it says Rice 436 or something like that, that's what's happening. Another note on the homework. So some people didn't realize on the homework that it's a subset of C that includes variables and multiple statements. Like, it is actually possible to do all of them in the minimum number of operations in one line without semicolon, with only like a return statement, but not worth it. Like, use multiple statements. Also, there's only arithmetic shifts. So for some reason, the code I inherited to implement this allows you to declare something as unsigned but doesn't like pay attention to that. In a future semester, I will remove that, but I can't do it now because it would break some people's working submissions. And some people asked questions about this week's quiz, like anonymous feedback in other ways. So let's talk briefly about the quiz. Here. So first let's talk about this first question here, which is saying that IRemoveQ performs in our textbook's design, uses the ALU to do an addition, to add zero to the constant. So this is the design our textbook authors chose because it meant less wiring to the register value input, if you remember. And so the alternatives here, the one which works, is changing the value to write input to just send that value directly instead of adding zero to it and then sending it to the register file. And I also will go over the one which confused the most people on this quiz, which was about what address is passed to the data memory during PopQ. So what address does PopQ access in memory?
RSP.
And it's the current value of RSP, not the value it's going to set it to. So it was the value it was going to set it to, that would be what the ALU is computing. But it's the current value before the instruction runs that PopQ accesses. And so that's why we can't send the output of the ALU there, but we send the output of the register file to the input. and the register, in particular, hopefully the output of the register file that's outputting RSP and not something else. So any questions on anything on the quiz? The fourth question, okay. So this question, we have some HCL code and I ask you what happens after three rising clock edges. So to answer this, I would find it saying to, I'll copy down the question. So we have XA equals YA plus YB and XB equals YB plus Y. So that's the HCL code we have. And X, this side is the register input values. And this is the end being computed. And this is, for example, this YB is the output of register B. And initially, I think it says they're zero. So what I like to do is just make a chart of what's the value of everything at every time. So we have XA, XB, YA, YB. And we know that initially, so YA and YB are both zero. And so we can look at these expressions and say, what are XA and XB given that? So XA is YA plus YB, zero plus zero. XB is YB plus 1, which is 1. And after a rising edge of the clock, what's going to happen is we're going to end up copying XB into YB and copying XA into YA, because that's what our registers do every rising edge of the clock. They copy their input to their output. So given that, we know that this here is 0 and this is 1. And we can do the same thing. XA is YA plus YB, which is 1. And XB is YB plus 1, which is 2. And after another rising edge of the clock, we have the same copying happening. So we have 2 and 1. And we do the same procedure. XB is YB plus 1, which is 3. XA is YA plus YB, which is 3. And I believe it asks after 3, so this is after 1, after 2, and this will be after 3 right here. So we have 3 and 3. And I think it asks the value of YB, so we're done. YB or YA at that point. So that's all we need to do. And I would not figure this out without writing this. I would not consistently get the right answer unless I wrote out this chart, because I would make some off by one error otherwise, and I would recommend doing that in general when you need to figure something like this out. Okay, any other questions on the quiz? Okay, so let's move on to general exam review. So, yeah, sorry. So the question is, why doesn't the stage represent the actual order in which the processor executes the instruction? So let's go take a so if we think about what our processor basically looks like, we have an instruction memory. So I'll give one example where it doesn't happen in that order. Instruction memory, which goes to the register file, PC, which goes to the instruction memory, which goes to the register file, which goes to the ALU, which goes to the data memory, which goes back to the register file, and sometimes to the PC. And we also have some other logic which goes to the PC. So let me give an example where things might finish more quickly. So in the case where we have, for example, an add instruction, we're going to have to do a computation where we go through the register file, go through the ALU, and then send the value back to the register file. That's one of the paths values are going to go through our processor. Another thing which is going to happen is a value is going to come out of the instruction memory, and we're going to compute the address of the next instruction and decide to send that to the PC. These two things are going to happen at the same time. So there's no reason that the PC update part won't happen earlier or later. Like, there's not actually order, there's nothing in the hardware causing them to have any particular order. So that's one reason. So another reason is, let's say we were doing a RM move queue. Then we would send a value through the register file, through the ALU, to the data memory. And conceptually, when we write down our RM move queue, the write happens immediately when we do the memory stage, you know, if we're thinking that it's in order. But actually, the write to the data memory is going to happen at the same time as the update here to the PC. So there's not, that doesn't determine the actual order in that case, for example. It's another example. So there are some cases where it is the order, so like we have to read registers before we compute in the values we read, but not always. And it's not an accident that it is an order we could do the instructions in. That will come up later when we use these stages for more than just making it easier to build our processor. Okay. Any other questions on the quiz? So if not, Al will take general questions about anything you want to know for the exam. If you don't have any questions, this will be a very short class. Yes?
Clarify where the zeroth clock cycle starts.
So zeroth clock cycle. Okay. I'll just collect the questions right now and answer them all together, so I can hopefully group them by category.
Yeah. Can you talk about logistics for Thursday? Is it taken during class time?
Logistics of the exam. Okay. When is it? When? How long? Etc. Okay. Other. Yes.
Can you go over question 5?
5 from fall 2016. Can you tell me what type of thing that question's about?
It's about determining what the value of a register in memory is after looking at some instructions.
Value of a register in memory from
there's two instructions and it's after this move instruction what the value in RA is.
After memory instruction. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay, logistics of lab tomorrow. Okay.
Can you go over the falling edge and the rise, just the clock cycle?
Zero with clock cycle, falling, rising edges, and clock cycles, okay?
I see a few questions on, I think, the fall spring 2014. The exam was on the supposed to be 2.5 years, and it's this sort of address.
Okay, values in memory and endianess, okay. Do you have a, yes, yeah.
Can you discuss the range of the exam?
Range?
Okay.
Okay.
Could you go over in general the syntax of AT&T and Rex graphs
and
you want to use
parentheses? Okay.
Could you go over for each of the six stages or whatever of execution, what the exceptions are, rule behavior?
Exceptions?
So, which instructions do you give things that
make it? Okay. And stages, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Why would an AND one not work the same as a double top?
Okay. AND one versus. Okay. So, anything else that people can think of right now?
Also, yeah. The sign and zero flags when you need an XOR.
ZF, and XOR. Okay. Yeah.
I have a question about the multiply and accumulate.
Okay. A question from.
Yeah, it's Spring 2017.
Okay. Okay. Anything else?
Question 12.
Spring 2016. 15 Q12. What's that about generally?
Floats.
Floats? Okay. Floating point. Okay. Anything else? I'll ask again later, but if it's not on the list, we might not get to it, depending on how long this takes. Okay. So first, let's go through boring logistics. Okay, logistics of the exam. It's in class on Thursday. 75 minutes, the length of class time. It's similar in the length and format to prior exams. What's covered? Everything from lecture, labs, and homeworks, except command line. That's for your useful to you, not tested. And writing HCL and HCL syntax details, like do you need a semicolon or a comma, or what needs to be declared with a with and what doesn't, that sort of thing we won't ask about. Things that not covered on the exam includes things that we don't cover in this course anymore, we may have before, like floating point. Hope that answers the floating point question. I'll gladly talk about how floating point works, but not during this review.
I'm just wondering, by writing HCL, do you mean that we need to know how to read it? And not
yes, you might need to know, we might describe a circuit with HCL, but we're not going to have you write it. We're not going to ask you about anything about syntax, like you don't need to remember what things need to be declared with widths. Is there a semicolon or a comma, that sort of thing. We certainly do not want to ask you about what's an error, what isn't. Okay, and logistics of lab tomorrow. Exam review, come with questions. TAs probably won't prepare things. They're allowed to, but I don't anticipate it. What commonly happens is the TAs will go over some selection of past exam questions. Okay, anything I'm missing on logistics? Okay, so falling rising edges and clock cycles. So one question here is, what's the zeroth clock cycle? We will try very hard to avoid this ambiguity. So I will, on the exam, when I talk about clock cycles, I'll say, like, here's the state and after so many falling or rising edges, or I'll say, initially, during clock cycle zero, the state is X, and then something happens. To avoid any ambiguity on when does the clock cycle start, that sort of thing. This is a problem in some of the prior exams where we've had to actually accept multiple answers because we said clock cycle zero and we weren't clear on what that meant. So we will try to say something like, initially, during clock cycle zero, what's true during clock cycle one? And you can assume clock cycle one means that a rising edge has happened. So falling and rising edges. So falling edges don't matter to us. So we don't care about falling edges, but they have to happen in order to have a rising edge. So rising edges trigger writes, conceptually, the boundary between clock cycles is the rising edge.
So everything happens between rising edges, and when a rising edge occurs, that triggers the write, I suppose?
Yeah, so the rising edge triggers all the writes, and between rising edges is when reads and computations occur.
And so, what is the clock? Like, it's obviously like what defines it?
What is the clock? So the clock is a global processor-wide, that is, signal to coordinate our computation. We want everything to happen in sync, and the way we do it in this course is with this global signal that comes from a central location. And it just periodically rises and falls. And rate slow enough that computations have time to happen. And after this exam, we'll talk a little bit about what that speed actually is. But for now, you can assume that to make our processor work correctly, we've made our clock cycle slow enough that like the ALU has enough time to do an addition. If we don't do that, bad things will happen. Okay, so that's about the clock. Anything confusing about the clock here that I didn't sort of elaborate on? Okay, so then we have some questions about register values, retrieving values from memory into registers. And the big issue here with these questions is you need to think about endianness. So I guess I could pull up these instruction questions. Okay, so we have a question number, right? Q5, okay. So I can pull up question 5. Okay. So I will just... So the question is this one, where we have some machine code, and it asks exactly what the value of RAX is when we're done with this. And I think this question is... Oh, I think we had to drop this question because there's something missing here, but I'll talk about the general pattern of answering, or I gave the uploaded the wrong version of the exam as the past exam. So the general pattern, so the pattern here is we have something like, is that we have something like, let's write in a readable color, something like, so I remove Q, let's say, 0 RAX, and MR move Q, and it might be something like RAX, RAX. And this is at address 0, and this is at, therefore, address 0xMA. So the general thing we want to figure out is what this is accessing memory. So what address are we accessing memory at? And here we know RAX equals 0. In the question that I think is posted on that, you can't answer it because we don't tell you what RA8 is, which is a problem. We may have clarified that during the exam, or that I may have uploaded a draft of the exam instead of the final version. So in this case, 0, this would access memory at 0 plus the value of RAX, which is address 0. And address 0 is in the middle of the I remove Q instruction. So what you would do is you'd look at the encoding we showed you for I remove Q. Something like here. So here we showed you what the encoding is, and we tell you that we have its encoding as a sequence of bytes in hexadecimal. So we have 30F00A, so remember So we tell you that 0 is 30, F0, 0A, 0, and so on. So this means that the byte at address 0 is 30, the byte at address 1 is F0, the byte at address 2 is 0A, and so on. That's what that would mean. And I guess this is not the actual encoding of this for the way things work out. But if we had this information and we're accessing memory at address 0, what does the mRemove Q instruction read? I'll do OXA to match this instruction. Equals OX. Yeah. I'll correct this to actually match the instruction we gave. So sorry? Yeah, so this is the address we're accessing with this. This address 0. But that's a byte. And the mRemove Q instruction accesses 8 bytes. So what we're actually reading here is 8 bytes worth as one number. So that's the first thing you need to notice, is that RAX is a 64-bit register. When we read into it from memory, we're reading 8 bytes. So the part of what we're reading is this 30, but we're also reading this F0 and this 00 and putting that together into one number. Yes?
What are those two beginning with? Why is it IRM0 RAX?
This is a different version of the question that works, but. What are you asking about?
Is the second part, is that RAX?
Here? Yeah, I just wrote RAX to RAX to make things simple. I'm going over this style of question, which is hopefully helpful enough. Not the exact question that was on the prior exam. So here we have, so we're reading 8 bytes, so we need to know how those bytes are turned into a single integer. And the rule is, you know, always little endian in this class. Also, if you forget that, we will tell you on the first page of the exam. So it's always little endian, which means the first address is least significant. So the value we want has a 30 in the least significant part, which in English I'm going to write at the end. That's hex 30, then F0 in the next least significant part, then 00, and so on. And we do that until we get 8 values out. And that's the value that's read into the register. Yes?
So like the answer should be in big endian?
The answer is written like we write numbers in English, which is essentially big endian, yes. But I mean, we're not ordering bytes, we're ordering hex digits, which is not the same thing. Yeah.
What was the answer to the first question before question 5?
So we're asking about here, we have the here. What is the value of RAX after the first instruction executes? Okay. So there, our instruction is IRMOVEQ from label to RAX. So what does a label represent? And this is also a miswritten assembly snippet. But what does a label represent in assembly? Remembers.
An address.
So I guess, so All right, my, so little, so, for label represents an address. So label is replaced with that address, is how you should think of it. Really, that is really written IRMUQ dollar label into RAX instead of label. But the idea is it represents the address of the label, which in this case, this question, label was in front of instruction at OXA, represents, so the label is OXA. Just because that was the address of the instruction when we put everything together. And in the example, you could have also figured that out by looking at what's the encoding of the instruction, which we gave you. I think what I covered for little endian order also covers the other question from the spring 2014, if I remember that question correctly, though I think this question had MR move L, which accesses 4 bytes, but it was the same idea otherwise. And you had to know what's in memory in each byte. Yeah.
Why is it an IRM?
What? So, okay, so the question is, what's the difference between, so, IRMUVQ dollar label RAX versus MRMUVQ label RAX. So what would be the difference between these two instructions, is the question?
Yeah, wait, was it written the first way?
It was written incorrectly, so it should have been written instead of IRMUQ label RAX.
So then, in the first case, the address of that label is being treated as a constant?
Yeah, so IRMUVQ here, label is a constant value. MRMUVQ, label is the place where the instruction accesses memory.
The effect of both instructions is the same?
No. So the effect of both instructions is not the same. So the IRMUVQ, RAX has that constant value. And the MRMUVQ, RAX reads from memory at that address and contains the result as a little endian number. Yes? Okay, let me look at the question then. So what's the spring 2014 question number?
It's question one.
Spring 2014, exam one, okay. Really? Spring 2014?
Yeah.
Okay, that explains it. Some of us don't have.
I was wondering why I couldn't pull up that exam.
Okay, so question one here. Okay, so question one is where we have a value stored at address 24. What byte is at address 25? So if we're storing a value at address 24, so we have memory. Memory is remember an array of bytes. So we have address hex 24, hex 25, hex 26, hex 27, hex 28, and so on. And if we want to store a value in this case, 0x1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Here, it doesn't fit. It's not a one byte value. So we need to split it across multiple bytes. And our policy is when we say we store something at address 24 and it's multiple bytes, 24 is where the first part of it goes, the next part of it goes in 25, and so on. So this 4-byte value is going to take up these 4 bytes of memory. And we need to decide how to split it up into the pieces. And our policy is little endian, so which is least significant byte at lowest address. So this is the least significant byte, this 7-8, and that's what's going to go to the 24. The next least significant byte is 5-6, part which affects the value least. That's going to go at 25 and so on. So ultimately, we're going to put this in memory like so.
What about big endian?
Okay, so this is for little endian. Is least significant byte. So this is little endian. If we were doing big endian, which I'll do in a different color. So big endian is most significant byte at lowest address. So in that case, the most significant byte is this 1-2. That's the biggest part of the value. A byte, so that would go at address 24, then 3-4, then 5-6, then 7-8. And the value stored at 25, address 25 hex would be 30 hex 3-4. So any other questions about endianness and how we read values in and out of bytes of memory into larger values? So this was, I remember which question that was wrong. So bytes storing in the little endian order writes, storing 4-byte value writes 4 consecutive bytes in memory. Lowest address has least significant part of number, 1's to 1's place. Big endian, lowest address has most significant part, 1's place. So 1's place appears at highest address. Anything else on endianness before that would be good to ask now? So I'll ask again later. Okay, so next thing asked about is AT&T syntax. So what are our rules for AT&T syntax? Okay, so we have several things in AT&T syntax that we talked about. So one is how operands are specified. So we have several options. So something like RAX is value in the register RAX. Always means we're reading or writing the value in the register itself. RAX in parentheses is value in memory at the address specified by RAX. If we add a number in front of that, that's value in memory at 10 plus that address, and the number is 10. If we add another value register there, that's value in memory at 10 plus, at the address specified by 10 plus value in RAX. plus value in RBX. If we add what is called a scale to that, this is value in memory, the address specified by 10 plus here, value in RAX plus 4 times value in RBX. So this is the sort of array access version. Array access, RAX is address of array, RBX is index, 4 is element size. That's how you can think of that, and that's sort of why that exists in the x86 instruction set. And we have another case, so we have something like $10 is the value 10. And similarly, $1234 is the value 0x1234. 0x1234 is the value in memory at address 1234. I think with one minor exception, that's everything we talked about. I'll get to the exception later. So those are all the sorts of operands we can have. There's a pattern they follow. So everything with parentheses always means talking about an address in memory. And everything without parentheses, with a dollar sign, is always a constant. With just a register is the value of that register, is being what's being referred to. And with just a number, is the number is an address. Okay, so we also have instruction postfixes. So move Q, so what is it? I want an example where this matters. Yeah, so RAX writes 8 bytes. Move L, when RAX writes 4 bytes. Move W, X writes 2 bytes. And move B, X writes 1 byte. So there's Q, L, W, B represent how big the value the instruction acts on, and we sometimes actually need it, or else the instruction would be ambiguous, and this is one of those cases. Yeah?
What is the overwrite procedure again for like accessing using L over like a Q?
What's the...
So like say if I only access the like the 4 bytes, but then like a register or whatnot, like when does it overwrite the...
So the question is, if you do something like move L $1 RAX, what does that do?
Yeah, does it...
So this is an error, is what that does. So there's no like... So yeah, if you specify a postfix that doesn't make sense with the type of value you're writing to, it's just an error. So that would be an error. Here, this wasn't an error because you can have all those sizes of values in memory. But otherwise, it's just an error. There's not a question of what it does. If you're asking what move L $1 EAX does to RAX?
Yeah, that's what...
So clears the rest of RAX. But moving to AX does not clear the rest of RAX. Just an arbitrary rule that the 32-bit registers clear the rest of the 64, the other ones don't, the smaller ones don't. We won't test you on that. I just mentioned it because it helps when you're like doing the bottom homework. Yeah?
What's the difference between the value and the register and the value in the memory address specified? What does the address specify?
That means we take the value, when I say address specified, I mean I use the value in the register and access memory using that address. When I mean the value in the register, I mean if we're writing to it, we change the register's value, we send a signal to the register file to change the value. For reading from it, we use what the register file puts out directly. That clear enough?
Kinda. Could you like say that in a different way?
So when I'm talking about the value in the register, we're only using the register file. When I'm talking about the address specified by the register, we're using both the register file and the data memory. Yeah. Yeah. That's another way of looking at it, is I'm using the register as a pointer or part of a pointer. Yeah.
So to backtrack a little bit, on line 53, what's the point of 10? Like, I get what it's doing, it's 10 plus the value of REX, but why would you ever want to do that?
So, okay.
What? REX the first, like, yeah, the first element in the array?
So the question is, why would you ever want to do this? So one example is if we had something like struct data int info care of, thousand. And we had a pointer to data here, pointer points here. This is 10, this might be 4 plus REX. And if we're accessing that array with the pointer to REX, it would be convenient to have that extra offset. And that comes up a lot. There's other cases you can imagine, like also if we had an array of data, of struct data, and wanted to access a particular part of it, the structure, that would let us do it. Annotate this. This displacement is full. So I'll do go to times plus. Okay, any other questions on this? So I'll go over some, there's some other AT&T syntax stuff I'll mention in a bit, but just this operand specification. I'm sorry, it doesn't fit on one page right now. Okay, so another AT&T, so some tricky part, tricky instructions. So one of them is LEA, which is load effective address. And this work, and this is in both AT&T, this syntax, and Intel syntax, written like a memory access, but doesn't access memory. Memory uses the address at which we would access memory. So it loads the address. So it looks like a memory access, but it just uses the address we would use, the effective address that we would access directly rather than actually touching memory. So basically it acts like a move, but we just, instead of sending something to the data memory, we just send that directly to the destination register. So like, memory move from memory, but send value from address to destination instead of from data memory to destination. The other tricky case is computed jumps, which don't exist in YAD6. As does LEA, which is like, which the syntax is something like X, this is access memory at plus RAX value of RAX, then use that value as the address to jump to. So this is doubly indirect. That's why it has the extra star. So two layers of pointers, essentially. Then, and we saw this used for like switch statements where we had a list of addresses to go to. And the star is there in the instruction to say that we're doing accessing a pointer through a pointer, essentially. Yeah.
What do you mean by like move from memory but send by data memory address instead of from data memory?
Memory output, I should say. So we do exactly what we do to set up a move in our processor, but then we change it by, instead of sending the address to a data that we would send to the data memory, we just send that address to the register file directly to write. Whereas if we were doing a move, we would send the address to the data memory and send what the data memory outputs to the register file. I don't know if this is the easiest way of thinking about it, but I want to explain it in multiple ways. So the other way of thinking about it is that we just do the address, it's just an instruction which does addition and multiplication based on the operand specification of an address. Yeah. The important thing to remember is that it's an arithmetic instruction, not a memory accessing instruction. Yes?
So just to clarify, like what move would do is get what is actually at that address in memory.
Yeah.
And then what load effective address is going to do is just put that address that you computed inside the register.
Yeah. So for example, LEA RAX RBX to RCX does RCX gets RAX plus RBX. Or if we did move that as a move instruction, that would do RCX gets memory at RAX plus RBX. So it would use the sum as a pointer. Yes. So we access memory, RAX is the register value. Yeah, so we're using the register value of RAX plus the constant there to access memory. And then we're using that as the address of the next instruction, what we read from memory.
But if you wanted the memory address, would you do like a double parentheses?
So that would, if RAX contained a pointer to my table, you mean? Conceptually, yes, that's not supported in x86 instruction. Okay. So anything? Any other questions on AT&T syntax and other sort of assembly nits? Okay, so what happens in stages? So let's go through the stages step by step. So we have fetch. So in fetch, we read from the instruction memory. This is always exactly the same. And we find the length of the instruction, compute address of the next instruction, in memory, which may not be the next one we run, on a jump, for example. Decode, we read register values. So some instruction, so sometimes no registers, for example, NOP, sometimes up to two from instruction. For example, add Q. Sometimes one from instruction and RSP, for example, for push Q. And there's a few other cases. So then we have execute. This is where we do something with the ALU. So the computation the instruction is supposed to do, so add Q, and Q, etc., address computations for MR move Q, RM move Q, push Q, pop Q, ret, call. I guess I'll mention. And so that's, and some instructions sometimes know nothing, sometimes nothing as in now. Nothing does not. The ALU is still there. It's computing something, but we don't care what it does. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Up to two. So then we have memory. So this is do something with the data memory, either reading or writing. Write. Sometimes nothing. So add Q, not, like, don't do anything with the data memory. Sometimes write from register. So for example, for RM move Q or push Q from the PC plus 10 for call. I don't think there's any other cases. Sometimes we read. From address just computed, or from register for the special case of pop and ret, where we're computing the address that we want the stack pointer to be at, which is not where we want to read anymore. Then we have write back, where we write something, write some registers. So sometimes nothing, so not. RM move Q, for example. Sometimes we write often one register, either RA or RB from instruction. So this is add Q, RM move Q, etc. Register of instruction. And sometimes RSP. RSP and sometimes even RSP and another register for pop. Yeah. That's right. If we're writing to the data memory, we call that part of the memory stage. Yeah.
So every time there's a, like, sometimes, that means there's going to be a constant, right?
Probably, yes. There might be some cases where we can get away without doing that, like, as much, because, like, we might decide that we're going to read registers even though we don't need to, for example. But generally, it would be at least reasonable to put a mux there. And then we have PC update. So usually, set PC input to value computed in fetch, the address of next instruction in memory. Sometimes PC equals value from instruction. This is for call and jump, and conditional jumps, and non-conditional jumps. And sometimes PC equals value from memory. Memory, this is for ret. Yeah. So is there overlap with write back and execute? What do you mean by overlap? R division does have The division is going to be clear. It will be clearer later, but no, they're write back is just writing values to registers. So execute is just computing values we may write, but there's not going to be overlap in that sense. We might share information. So for example, conditional move instructions are going to need to know something about the condition codes, which are handled in execute in the write back stage. But they're still separate parts, even though they send information to each other. Okay, so yeah.
Does order matter for any of these?
Does order matter? What do you mean by order?
So do they have, you said the stages don't have any order, they kind of happen at the same time, but it seems like you need to do fetch before you do the CFD.
So the stages happen, so there's some things which, because of how the processor works, physically have to happen in some order, but it's not a one-to-one correspondence with the stages. But it is, for example, true that we can't add two values we read from the register file until we read from the register file. And yeah, we can't store the value we read from data memory into the PC until we read it from memory. But when the processor is running, yeah, it won't be strictly stage by stage. Yeah.
Permission goes reset.
Yes, so this conceptually, in execute, this is handle condition codes, set or read.
It's not dependent on the writing of the process.
Setting the condition code, so this is the stage we're dealing with it in. When it actually happens, it's going to be the rising edge of the clock because the condition codes are a register, when the condition codes will actually update. But conceptually, where the part of the processor we consider that a part of is the execute part. Just like the write back isn't the last step I have written down, and the writes only actually happen at the rising edge of the clock. Yes?
So speaking about like the cycle, like what exactly happens with the rising edge? It's like the write back, the PC update, and then calculating condition codes?
So we have... it triggers writes. So anything that's written happens in the write backs, and it happens at the rising edge of the clock. This includes condition codes, this includes values in registers, this includes values in memory, this includes the PC. It all happens at the rising edge. So register file, register PC, condition codes. Okay, so let's try to get to bitwise. So bitwise true and false. I suppose I could go through some, find some example of this. I thought I had it. Oh, I probably have it up here, don't I? So I assume, no, did not ask it that semester. Well, we'll do. So if we look at some crazy bitwise true and false, like here, what's the strategy for generally answering these? Is, I assume, the question. Yeah?
Well, my question was about the flags, because there's a question that said XOR Q, RAX, RBX.
Okay. There was also this question. So I'll get to this first. I'll try to make sure I get the flags. So for these, so how do we figure out what the answer is? So for some of the times, you should figure out, like, you should try to work on this bit by bit. You should figure out where each bit goes. So on this first example here, for example, any bit, if some bit is 0 in x and 0 in y, we know the result is 0 on both sides. So they could be equal. They can only be equal if they're both zeros. If one bit in y is 1, and the bit in one bit in y is 1 and the bit in x is 0, the result is 1 on the left side and 0 on the other, so that's greater than or equal. So that works. If it's 1 and 1, you find out that it's 1 greater and 1 on either side, so the greater than or equal works. If it's 0 and 1, you find that it's 1 and 0. So it's always greater than or equal as long as we don't have any sign bits involved.
Okay, yeah, it does not
And the question, of course, is how you know there were no sign bits involved. And the answer is that we tell you right in the question. And if there were sign bits involved, you need to think, what could happen to the sign bit? So if the sign bits were involved, it would be easy to say, well, we could flip the sign bit either way. We had the sign bit set on the left side and not the right, so it's not always true. You'd find a counterexample that way. That would be my strategy. So either look for easy counterexamples, like if you can flip the sign bit, that's a likely case where you can construct something where something weird happens that's not the normal case. And also you can try simple values like all zeros and make sure that that's not like a counterexample. Yeah?
What's the difference between the complement of y and negative y?
So complement of y and negative y. So who remembers from 2's complement what the rule is for, well, how 2's complement, how negating the value works? Yeah. So back, yeah, there.
Doesn't it flip all the bits and then add one?
Yeah, so our rule from 2150 is flip all the bits and add one to do 2's complement. So that tells you exactly what the relationship is. So negative y is tilde y plus one. And that's how you can tell that's always true. Given that we've exempted the one value, the case where there's overflow. So zero is a case where it just doesn't work quite so well. Or, yeah.
So is negative y just flipping all the bits? Or?
Yeah, so negative y is just flip, so sorry, tilde y is just flipping all the bits. Negative y is flip all the bits and add one.
Oh, the bits.
That's how you can tell the relation. There's one exception, which is zero. But we exclude that in the up here. We say it's strictly greater than zero. And the similar logic is how you're gonna how you'd answer D. Is you can figure out what you know how that relates to negating the value, and turn that into sort of an arithmetic expression that relates naturally to the greater than. And for this, so for this one, you can use the rule about what the relationship is between negating and flipping bits, or you can try to look for a counterexample. So for shifting, the places where you expect something weird to happen that isn't the common case. So what I would look for is when we're shifting an important part of the value off the number. So we're shifting it away. So I think about values which are really small, because that's where shifting by 2 might remove all the value bits I have. So let's say I think of 1. If x is 1, negative 1 shifted over by 2, with ints, so that's an arithmetic shift, is going to still be negative 1. It's going to shift in ones. Shifting 1 over by 2 is going to give us 0, though. And that's how you can tell if there's at least one case where they're different. And here, so for this one, for example, you'd work out by what the sign bit does. That's the only bit you need to care about, because we're asking less than 0. That's another thing to look for. If we're comparing to 0, the question should be, what happens to the sign bit? That's the only bit you need to figure out what happens to. You can ignore all the other bits. So any other ones of these which are confusing or questions? Yeah?
What is the question mark of this?
So what is the ternary operator is the question. So let's write that down. So ternary operator. Operator Z is if x return y, if x, y, else z. So. But you know, it returns the value. Bitwise TF. So general strategies are work bit by bit. tilde x imply, so sorry, minus x is the same as flip all the bits and add one. Comparing to zero, what happens to the sign bit? Look for counter examples shifting important bits off a number, overflow sign bits, etc. So x and 1 versus exclamation point exponent x. If x equals 2, x and 1 is 0. And exclamation point, but exclamation point x is, exclamation point asks, is the value true in C? Anything that's not 0 is true. So x 2 as x is going to be true. It's going to be true. It's going to, which turns to false. And we flip that again, it turns to true. Not sure that was clear. So. Exclamation of x equals 0. True. So I'd like to get to the last questions here briefly before I will ask again about bitwise stuff. So SF, ZF, and XOR. So SF and ZF are based on the result of the computation. So if XOR yields a negative number, SF is true. If XOR yields 0, ZF is true. This is the same rules as subtraction. You just have to reason about what the values XOR produces are. So when will XOR yield a negative number? If the sign bit could be set. When will XOR yield 0? When is the result of XOR 0? Yeah.
XOR something within a cell.
Yes. The values are equal. Could be set. And the sign bit could be set in XOR's result if the sign bit is set in exactly one of the two values. If they're equal, or if they both have a sign bit set, the sign bit won't be set in the XOR's result because XOR checks for exactly one of them being set. So the past exam question, I think, had this case where XOR yields 0 because we XOR the same a value with itself, which is always 0. So there's also a question on adding an MAD instruction. And one question, so the person who asked this, was this about the timing issue, that the confusion, or?
Yeah, it was about like, why it would be faster to use separate instructions.
So the question is, would this be faster than two separate instructions? So adding this instruction will make our clock cycle longer. Longer. By extra time the ALU needs to do this, okay? So we've made our ALU a lot more complicated, so our clock cycle is gonna be a lot longer. But on this new processor, but we still have work other than the ALU in each clock cycle. So before, multiply plus add is like load instruction, load multiply instruction, do multiply, load add instruction, do add. After, with MAD, one instruction, we load MAD, this combined instruction, and do multiply plus add. So we're doing less work loading things from instruction memory to execute that. So it's going to be faster. We'll talk a bunch more about timing when we talk about other things that will improve our timing in the second third of the course. But that's the idea. Any questions? So any questions about anything I just talked about, bit fiddling stuff, or this, that I can answer kind of quickly? Apparently not, okay. So hopefully this was helpful. So TAs will be available Wednesday for review. There's office hours as usual. And you're absolutely welcome to ask exam questions during that. And these notes will be posted.
Can I ask a quick question?